bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle, bicycle, bicycle. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride my bike. I want to ride my bicycle. I want to ride it where I like.
You say black,
I say white.
You say bar,
I say bite.
You say shark,
I say him. Say Royce,
you say God,
give me a choice.
Say Lord,
I say Christ, I don't believe in Peter Pan, Frankenstein or Superman.
And all I wanna do is
to a new episode of Bike Support Radio. This is Robert, and I'm your host, so welcome aboard. Been an interesting week in the cycling world. Just got back from Sea Otter, and that has turned into a spectacle, to say the least. Something estimated, rumors flying around of 40,000 people walking through the gate. I believe it. It was a pretty intense weekend. Lots of people there, lots of vendors, and it's turned into something just amazing. And I was there. So I was there 3 days, and almost needed 4 days to really cover everything. I think we had over 500 vendors there. So this is the new spring season of, well, I guess it's a new spring Interbike. I mean, pretty much all you can say about it. So anyways, it was a pretty neat, weather was perfect. I think Thursday it was super cold and a little rainy. Everybody was bundled up in jackets, and then Friday, Saturday, Sunday was beautiful. So we'll talk more about Sea Otter as we get further into the show. But I want to start off with a couple of really big things in the news, one of which was Lance Armstrong settled with our courts, and they settled the whole case, and a couple $1 million exchange hands, and he's done with cycling. And it's I don't know where I am on that. You know, I mean, as they say, they all do it. He was just the better one who did it. I mean, the reality is, yeah, the drugs help a lot, especially as you get older and recovery and things like that. And I don't get it. They all are doing some sort of thing. I mean, read any of the books from all these pros and they'll tell you what's going on. I mean, everybody's involved. So why are you gonna, I guess, pick on the one? I get it, you know, he lied. I mean, but then again, they all lie. So I don't know. It's strange. It's a whole strange situation, and I really don't want to be a downer on that, but it is something that, you know, I know the sport is trying to definitely clean itself up, and it's a challenge. I mean, we're getting the doping all the way down to the masters racing levels, and I mean, come on, seriously, why are you going to hurt yourself doing that garbage? So it's really tough. It's frustrating. I can tell you, as a clean racer, I mean, I don't even drink beer, so I know. I don't even drink alcohol, beer. I've never had a joint. I've never done any of that garbage. I've never taken anything to help me race, but, and I don't, you know, yeah, I see what people are taking, over-the-counter this and over-the-counter that, and supposedly it gives you a little boost. Why? I mean, then it's not the true me doing what I do, so. Whatever the case, Lance Armstrong is pretty much done. I think he's into multi-sport stuff anyways, and so be it. Let him go have his fun over there. You know, he'll. It's still, though, as I said, you know, I think the swipe, what he did in the past away. Look, the fact is he still had to get up every day and pedal a bike, and he still had to do what he had to do. And, you know, we know cycling's full of politics. It's team tactics. It's, you know, everybody works for one person, and that's how it is. And, you know, he was still, as they say, the top of the dopers, in a nutshell. So anyways, that's that, and I'm not going to dwell on too much of it, but yeah, it was pretty big news. You can look it up, read all the details if you want. Facebook was just all over the place that day, so social media was going crazy with everything. But, oh well, so be it. It's done. Done deal. A couple other things here locally in the LA area, San Fernando Valley area, actually. I actually attended a ghost bike ceremony, and wow was all I can say. It was an experience that, God, I just don't want to do anymore. But we're in a culture, especially in Los Angeles and California, it's a car culture. So it's always, you know, bicycles versus car. And as a motorcycle rider as well, I commute to work, and I mean, I spend time on the freeway, and, you know, as a motorcycle, you're really aware of everything, and it's just amazing how many people I see doing something other than driving their car, be it eating, be it makeup, be it on the phone, be it texting a message, typing a letter, writing a letter. I see it all in the mornings, and it's just amazing. It's just really scary, and, you know, this last ghost bike laying down was, it was a really fluke accident, and as they say, you know, I don't know, it was on a very clearly marked, wide open street, had a bike lane, but, you know, our biggest issue with bike lanes is that they're right in the door zone, so you've got to ride the edge of that door zone, but then it puts you right in the traffic. And fortunately, this street, there is an issue. It's a big, open, straight-line street, and there's a lot of speed involved. So, you know, I could definitely see how that could happen. You get hit. In this case, the person was doored, knocked out in traffic lanes, and the car hit him. So, rest in peace, Ryder. And I went to ceremony, and it was a very interesting event. And I don't know if I really want to attend another one. I mean, we do it out of respect, but, man, that hurt. It puts it close to home when you realize that, you know, this rider was just minutes from home, and he never made it. So, sad, very sad. But with that being said, once, you know, every day we must move on and move forward and just make things better. So get involved with your local communities and try to improve the bicycle infrastructure whenever you can. And, you know, hopefully we can cut back on this. Vision Zero just got in Los Angeles. Vision Zero just got $91 million, you know, IV, basically, a boost. So now it's just a matter of speaking up and fighting the driver. In the Marina Del Rey area, Playa Del Rey, there was a great move that was done where they took one traffic lane away and slowed the traffic down, is what they were needed to do. And then they opened up the bike lane and made a real nice, well-structured, safe bike lane. And, well, the car drivers got mad. And obviously they had a bigger voice than the cyclists. And, well, they ended up reverting everything back and recreated the dangers again. So it's really about us getting up there and speaking and getting our voices out. And the more we do that, then hopefully more change occurs. And I just have to say this, and I know most riders are fairly responsible, but you know what? Don't get greedy. And don't sit here and assume that people are going to do what they're supposed to do. So, for example, sharing a lane, taking a lane, be courteous about it. We have the right to do it, but doesn't always mean we should do it. I've seen some really asinine moves by riders and groups and just being greedy about it and being arrogant. and you can't be arrogant. It's share the road. When safe, let's allow them to pass us. Let it get by us. We don't want to have that pressure. I mean, I don't want to ride with that pressure behind me. And then, you know, I'm happy the youth is riding. Don't get me wrong, but someone's got to mentor these kids. I see them in and out, weaving in and out of traffic daily, always just zipping around like it's their personal racetrack, cutting cars off, and they're on fixed gear bikes, no brakes, and they really don't have the control. And I really hate seeing those bikes on the street. Velodrome, track racing, closed circuit racing, hey, I'm all for it. Good, have fun. But you don't need to be out in the street, and most of them are helmetless. Most of them are just being young hooligans, and I don't know, maybe I don't ever find myself being that way. Maybe when I was younger, some people I guess were. It's that thrill of the chase or whatever. But it gives everyone a bad name because they just say cyclist. We've had a lot of hit and run in LA County in the last couple of months here. Some really hit in the media. You know, we had the rider who was hit from behind in LA, and then we had the incident the following day where one of the people who was trying to organize the event and get everybody kind of, you know, settled down got hit by somebody who was angry at all the commotion. So, you know, people, we just gotta be people again, you know, care. Remember, that's a living soul that you're taking your machine and pointing them at. Anyway, enough of my editorial. Let's get to the good stuff. All right, so looking through the calendar for April, when it comes to the fun stuff, you know, I've been doing a lot of these fun rides. I'm having a great time doing them, too. But it's putting me in some new areas, checking things out, having more fun. So some road and cross stuff coming up. One of the biggest events, and I'm actually hoping to attend it, I should be there, is the Ride for Rwanda. Yeah, Ride for Rwanda, I guess, or Rwanda. Awesome ride. Great reason for being there. It's down in the Orange County, Mission Viejo area. It's an awesome event. It is a mountain bike / gravelish event. You could probably take a gravel bike and knock it out pretty good too. A couple of rough areas, but otherwise, you should be able to rock it. They got a nice 50-mile route, which is really challenging, actually. Hopefully there's no wind like last year. And it was a great ride. Great cause. The money's raised by this go back, and they buy bicycles for kids to go to school. I mean, back there in Rwanda, they have miles and miles before kids. They literally have to walk, you know, 5-10 miles to get to school. So they buy bikes for them. The bikes go back, and they give them to them. They just, here's a bicycle so you can get to school. So these kids will then, instead of walking to school, ride to school. So it's a great cause. I love doing this ride. And that's scheduled for this Saturday, April 28th. On Sunday, here in Griffin Park in the Los Angeles area, we've got the Finish the Ride Griffin Park. And that's another really good cause event. It's bringing awareness to safe streets and things like that. We really want to finish the ride. And in this case, Damien, and I always slaughter his last name, but Caveat, he was hit by a car and dragged onto the freeway. Luckily for him, he did survive. He did lose a portion of his leg, but he's a fighter and he did survive. And he's now started this Finish the Ride organization, which goes to different areas and establishes these rides, both, you know, long distance road rides and then 10K, 5K, kids races, kids events, things like that, family events. So a lot of great times. This is going to be April 29th, this Sunday, out of Griffin Park, over by the Autry. So check it out. It should be a fun event. You know, something to do with the whole family. It's a great cause. Damien's a pretty cool guy. You've seen him around. And, you know, he's just trying to, you know, prevent this from happening to someone else. And he's got a pretty positive outlook, so it's really cool. And I'd love to support that, too. So we'll see what kind of legs I have left on Sunday. All right. And then May 5th, I haven't done this thing in forever. The Rosarito, then it's not a bike ride. May 5th. Feel like going to Rosarito? all the way to Ensenada, it's about, it's 30, I thought it used to be 50 miles, but, somewhere like 37 now. Yeah, whatever the case, still a fun ride, right? No, but I think it's closer to 50 miles. And, fun ride, and, usually a mess. I mean, there's usually so many people. But then again, that was many years ago since I've done it, so something to take a look at. May 19th, they've got San Diego Century going on. You can check that out online. And that's it for right now. So that's in the Fun Ride Road / Cross Road Mountain Bike / whatever. In the road racing area, we have got quite a few races coming up this month. And it's kind of coming to an end, so you want to get your races in now, go ahead and do that. So here we're here at the end of April, and we got a couple events this coming weekend. The Barrio Logan Grand Prix out of, I believe it looks like San Diego area. That's going to be Saturday, April 28th. So if you're into some road and you want to do some Grand Prix, there you go, you got that. And then on April 29th is Dana Point Grand Prix, and of course that's in Dana Point. It's back. I mean, it's one of the more famous races around. So you want to check that out. It's, like I said, we're coming to an end, sort of. Of course, there's always going to be, you know, a race here and there. But a lot of the big ones are, you know, now. And then let's talk about the Redlands Bicycle Classic, which starts May 2nd and goes till May 6th. So a few days of racing there. Looks like, pretty much Wednesday through Sunday. And different stages. It's got different events going on, so you take a look at that out of Redlands. And that's sponsored by San Manuel Casino out there, so you can check that out. And then during that time, you've got the Rosanna Ranch Circuit Race as well. So, you know, go watch the pros. Go race yourself. And then on the 6th, they've got the Redlands Downtown Criterium. So in conjunction with the stage race, you can actually do criteriums on the last day there. And I believe those are going to be amateur. So you can take a look at that. I think that whole event, I think you can get in there if you want. Alrighty. Victorville actually has a two-day event, May 12th and 13th. And you're going to have the Victorville Road Race and the Victorville Criterium. And then the 13th. And, of course, it's not for all of us, but it's great to go watch. We can go take a look at the Amgen Tour of California starting May 13th, and that goes through the 19th. And you can go on their website to find out what day they're going to be in your neighborhood. You know, it's kind of a cool event. It's if you can get a day off and catch them during the midweek, that's really the fun times. Drive out to a location and just make a day of it. It's kind of cool to watch them come by. I always suggest they'll find them on a hill climb. So at least you can see them for more than, like, 2 seconds. It can kind of get like, there they go. And you're done, you know, and you wasted your whole day waiting for them. A lot of times, though, you can leapfrog around. Look at the maps ahead of time. You can actually figure out how to get from one point to another and catch them a couple times during, you know, a short period of time. So, Amgen Tour of California. I'm usually covering that event, but I think this year I'm just going to sit back and let them email it to me. It's a lot of driving, a lot of traveling. Alrighty, so that's our road race area. And for those who want some dirt action, well, we have got some great events coming up for that. Midweek series is racing. This is back in time here. We have, once again, the Ride for Rwanda. It's not really a race, but you slap a number on your bike and it becomes a race. You get people together, it becomes a race. But if you really want to do some racing, the Over the Hump series in Orange County begins May 8th. And it's pretty much every other week. So you've got an entire series. And then at the same time, for those down south in the San Diego area, we got the Mazda Quick and Dirty, and that begins May 10th. So these are the midweek series races. And you can go on their websites for the entire calendar so you can plan out your events. Over the Hump has done some reworking and revamping of their races. So let's see what happens this year. They're trying to, you know, clean it up is one way to put it. So we'll see how it goes. And then for those up in the northern LA County area, we actually have the Pedal Fest series starting. And I believe that's May 24th, if I got it correctly. It's in a new location right off of the 14 and the 5, Placerita Canyon. And the 14, I believe. They've been working really hard making a new course, new locations, private property, so it's great. They've got some use of this, and it looks like it's going to be a great event. Greg Flanagan does a great job putting on the races out there, so it's pretty cool. So let's get out there, support them, and have some fun. All right, so let's get into Sea Otter. 2018 Sea Otter Classic, as I mentioned earlier in the show, was just an amazing event to go to. And, you know, when you're there and you're watching all this roll by your face, it's amazing what has come about and what kind of technology is out there. And it's just, it's awe-inspiring. I mean, there's some geniuses out there coming up with some really cool things. And one thing that, and it's kind of that area of like, do I really want this? Do I really want this? You know, we get on a bike to get away from it all. But in this era, are we able to really get away from it all? There's a lot of people who are very into like, it's just got to be natural. It's got to be just, you know, me, the bike, and nothing else. Well, you know, we got to record everything, right? So a lot of technology was floating around. But to be honest with you, the technology would never have come had it not been for a couple of guys who were out there on beach cruisers just goofing around. And one thing that we have to remember is that a bunch of moto heads with old fat tires and a big hill really are what started all this. And I had the privilege to meet a couple of these guys, some of the originators who were there. And the first person I'm actually going to start, it's funny that we're going to start this, because I'm going to start with this guy because he was just, I think we need to go back to the roots before we can go forward. And in this case here, we're talking about, well, gotta clean that up. It wants to jump. Well, we're talking about Charlie Kelly. And Charlie Kelly he wrote a book called The Flat Tire Flyer. You gotta be careful when you say that. And in that book, he chronicles the entire start of this movement. And it's kind of cool to talk to him now while we're sitting around all this new modern technology and looking at what's going on, because his views on this are just so cool. And, you know, they're so humble. It's like, nah, we didn't do anything. We're just having fun. But they're really the reason why we have what we have. So start off here with an interview with our friend Charlie Kelly. Awesome, great guy, and here we go.
So you never know who you're going to run into when you're at any of these events, especially up here in Northern California, but every once in a great while you run into some people who've kind of been around the block a few times. He's just released a book, and it is, let me make sure I get the name right, because otherwise... Yeah, the Fat Tire Flyer. I should do my homework, but you know, we're live, and we're just out here, and this is real. It's no pressure, no stress. It's, you can curse if you want, because we're not regulated, so it doesn't matter. But anyways, I'm here with Charlie Kelly, the author of Fat Tire Flyer, and it's a really cool book. He was just showing me his personal copy, where everybody in the MTB world has actually almost signed it, right? I think we're not missing too many people.
I got one more guy to get. Richard Cunningham is around here somewhere, and I haven't got him yet, but I'll get him.
All right, if I see him, I'll try to yank him over here. So, but anyway, since it looks like a great piece of work, I think everyone's going to need to have it. I'm going to let him tell us more about what made you decide to do this.
Well, in the 70s, or actually around 1980, I started the very first mountain bike publication. It you wouldn't even call it a magazine when it first came out, more like a club newsletter, photocopied. But because it was the only thing in print for mountain bikers, people kept pestering me for more, and it became a regular thing. And I produced the first mountain bike magazine called the Fat Tire Flyer from 1980 until 1987. And by 1987, the world had changed quite a bit, and a number of major publishers had jumped into that field, and my little shoestring operation kind of got buried. But I have no regrets, because the research and all the articles that I wrote at the time served as the basis for my book, because I was actually documenting what was happening for my magazine. And because of that, I was pretty much the only person in a position to write a definitive history of the sport, and I have.
And that's something that's weird. Like, you know, you hear people who were seen at secondhand, and they were being told the stories and transferring the stories, but you were there to actually witness this and be part of that whole culture in the beginning, right?
The story is told in the first person, because there have been any number of attempts of people that will interview 50 people and try to synthesize something, and what they wind up is a mess. And so the one thing that nobody can argue about with me is what I did and what I thought about. And I can tell you what somebody else did, but I can't tell you why, and I won't bother. I can tell you why I did things and what I did, and maybe what other people did. But when you write in the first person, there's nothing anyone can dispute about your own life, because I'm just telling you what I did, you know. And so, because I was in fact right there in the middle of all that, that story becomes the story of mountain bikes also.
Yeah, and it looks like a great book. That thing's a big book, too. That's no little book you wrote.
You know, and I'm very happy with my publisher, because what I sent them was computer files, and what came back was something the size of a tombstone slab, you know, and in fact it's so big that I don't really want to carry more than two or three copies around, because, you know, my back won't take it. But, yeah, I was very happy with my publisher, which is Velo Press. Give them a plug here. And they did a beautiful job with my book, and once again, for all of you people, it's on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. You can find it anywhere.
That's awesome. There you go. So you pick up a piece of history, and if you were here in the Monterey area, you're going to be here for another day, or this is it?
I will be here for another day. I'm running out of copies of my book, but I do have some other souvenir swag associated with it, it's no longer a hobby. I actually like to get paid for it, but, you know, come by and bring your cash.
Wait, make money in the bike industry? No, what are you thinking?
like I say, it used to be a hobby.
Well, that's awesome, and thank you. So take a look at his book. It's actually a really, really cool-looking book, just to have that. If you're a cyclist, mountain bike, road, it don't matter. That needs to be sitting somewhere in your house, in your coffee table. That's an excellent description of a coffee table book. Thank you so much for that interview. It's awesome to sit here and talk to somebody who was there in the beginnings and sharing all that knowledge for the future generations.
It's my pleasure and my honor. Thank you very much.
So Charlie Kelly, he as he's saying in his book, it's all about the first person, you know, and the adventures. And he's really good at, like, he didn't want to give too much away of what's in the book, so we really want to get you out there to buy that book, take a look at it, and you can get it on Amazon, and it's really not that expensive, so it's a way to go. And sitting next to Charlie Kelly, it was cool because I could get everybody at one shot, was the another father of the sport, and I had the privilege and honor of interviewing Joe Breeze. Maybe. We are having technical difficulties. Let's try it again.
And we start with that. So, as I was talking to Charlie Kelly over there, standing next to him is another one of the originators of this craziness that we are standing in front of here, is Joe Breeze. And he's actually here with his line of bikes, Breezer Bikes, of course. But he's such a versatile, builder. I mean, you've gotten so many different kinds of bikes. It's, you know, certain people will stick with one type or whatever, but you're just kind of everything. You got mountain bike here, adventure bike, touring bike, gravel bike. What's going on with Joe Breeze these days?
Yeah. Well, that whole deal is, I just loving bikes, and there are many ways to enjoy it. And so I started with road, went to mountain, on to even getting around in our everyday lives with bikes. And now what we've brought out here to Sea Otter this year are our Breezer adventure bikes, gravel bikes, if you will. Pretty much is what we're showing, and that seems to be the biggest growing part of cycling these days. So that's what we got at our tent here. Just another way to love bikes.
Another way to get out there on two wheels and explore and just have an adventure, and you're still sticking with good old-fashioned steel, right?
Well, on these many of these bikes, they are steel. We do aluminum bikes. We've done carbon fiber. And my thing is not really so much the material, the truth be known. It's the structure of the frame, and the tubing is really the star of the show, and I pack as much tubing as possible into our frames, and that's kind of what differentiates them from many frames. There's less joinery, more tubing to give you that lively ride, and of course with steel you can have probably the liveliest ride, and so it's a very special feel. Yeah.
And it's so cool to see that. I mean, but it's kind of like you sit here and you think, oh, well, they're not up to the standards, up to the new modern technology. They're not up to this and that. But, you know, I'm looking at these things, and they're as modern as anything else out there on the market. So I wouldn't say that, you know, this is an old school bike, but it's got the old school mentality of keeping that bike together, make the bike become part of you. And that's what's important. If you're comfortable on a bike, you're going to ride it.
Yeah, and actually with steel, you can have a bike that can have a lot of elasticity in the frame and give you that comfortable ride. Of course, the tires really help, a large diameter tire, but right in the frame itself, you have this resilient structure with the steel. Even if it is three times as rigid as steel, you use a smaller diameter to make it flexible and work with you as a spring while you ride the bike.
So this is a true craftsman. This is somebody who, and you know, not to take away from all the stuff that's out there, because now that everyone's getting that same thing, they're using suspension though. It's kind of cheating in a way to make the bikes do what you want. Here you actually design it, you know how metal works, you know what to do with the tubing. I mean, I have a background. I used to be in off-road car racing, so I'm very familiar with structure and what you can do with frames and things like that. So it's the same thing that, you know, this is a lost art, I mean, is what I feel. It's now it's not a matter of really make the bike comfortable, make the bike do something. It's, let's see how light we can make it, and that's it, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of ways you can go. I'm a big believer in suspension, articulated suspension frames. In a lot of cases, maybe the roads are smoother, and your first encounter with that bump is the tire, and you can get your best suspension right out of the tire in a short travel bike, for sure. And once you get into some more rugged terrain, even with a pneumatic tire of a large diameter, you want to go with articulated suspension. So it all depends on what you're doing with the bike.
Sounds good. So great line of bikes. He's really gone into the gravel adventure bikes. He got some really nice looking ones there. I think I might have room on my rack for one of those.
Well, let's see what we can do there.
Anyways, Joe, it's been great talking to you. What else? I mean, what do you think of all this? I mean, there's 500 vendors here, and there's thousands of people here, and you turn around, and you're like in the middle hub here of all this.
Every year, the Sea Otter gets bigger, and of course, it's a glorious day today, and everybody's got a smile on their face, but there's so much to see here. It's open to the general public, unlike those trade shows, and so it's really special to have the end buyer, the buyer of that of your creation, come and talk to you about the brand. And this is something I've been doing for the last 40 years or so. So it's really special to have this kind of show like Sea Otter.
Actually, we need to have more of these, I think. We need to get bigger masses of people, these festivals together. Hey, I could see the Breeze Festival.
Okay, yeah. Definitely. It might not ever be the Breezer Festival, but yeah, the Breeze Festival.
Breeze. We might have a business going here. Joe, thanks so much for your time. I'm going to let you get back to sell some bikes.
Okay. Thanks so much.
So, Joe Breeze, what a character he was. I'm serious, though. I don't see why we can't throw any more festivals out there. I mean, come on, why not? So, yeah, he was really cool and great, you know, and very humble. I mean, but he's still old school in his philosophy of building bikes, and he had some really clean and very, you know, like I said, they don't look, you know, everybody's all into how they look and, ooh, it's got to have angles, it's got to have this, got to have that. But his bikes were so clean and very simple, and you know they were there to do their job. And that's what's so cool about his entire line of bikes. So there we go. We talked to two of the guys who were there from the beginning, who rode the old clunkers down the hill and just were there and were there in the beginning of this craziness. And it was kind of cool when we were talking off air. It's like, would you believe that, you know, this would all come about from what you guys did? And they say, no, we just were out there having fun. So you never know what you're going to create. So now we go from the past into the future and everything in between. And we actually, I'm going straight for this because this blew my mind. We know that technology is here to stay. Don't fight it. Embrace it. And it can also be one of those tools to help us create a safer experience while riding. And, you know, nowadays we're getting the radar that senses the cars behind us, and we get the little flash on the computers, and we've got interlinked light systems that, you know, work from head to toe and so on and so on. The biggest factor in anybody's safety is your own two eyes and keeping them on the road and constantly aware of what's in front of you. And, you know, we also have a fascination with what time is it, how many miles per hour are we traveling, what direction are we going. You know, we're trying to navigate, especially if it's someplace new. So there's a company that's come up with a really cool inner technology integrated sunglass, and it's called the Raptor, and this is from a company called Eversight. And we're going to listen to the the marketing director from Raptor, and it was a very cool pair of super advanced technological glasses that had a heads-up display in them, and not like previous glasses, and we'll talk about that. But I'm going to go ahead and let him chime in. Let's see if it plays.
Yeah. All right, so you hear that beat in the background. I'm at a really cool, couldn't find them. I've spent 2 hours looking for these guys, but it was definitely worth the hunt here. I'm here at Eversight, and I just got to sample the Raptor glasses, which basically has a heads-up display inside. All your data's in there. I'm still in shock. It's such a cool experience. This is definitely where we're going, but I'm here with Lance. And he is the mastermind behind all this?
No, I'm the Senior Vice President of Marketing and Biz Development.
Yeah, he's still the mastermind behind all this. We're going to sell him at that. But anyway, this is Lance. He was talking to me about these glasses. They're an amazing piece of technology. He's going to give us a little more insight onto the Raptor glasses.
Yeah, so Eversight is a startup company that was spun out of the largest defense company in Israel called Elbit Systems. Elbit's a publicly traded company on the NASDAQ and Tel Aviv Stock Exchange, and we were basically spun out of Elbit's Aero Division, which supply and develop helmet-mounted displays for fighter jets, so the F-16, the F-18, F-35, the Apache helicopter. It's an area that Elbit have dominated in with over 93% market share globally. So the point being is that our background is putting information in front of pilots' eyes. We really understand how to do that really well. And this project, Eversight, was born in 2001, where the team had this vision to shrink the technology into a form factor that could be applied in the consumer market. And they started the development of developing prototypes. In 2005, we then had our first prototype, which was essentially, had an element, an object that sat in front of your eye. And we went out to the market and worked with professional cyclists, really to get their feedback and understand the needs of cyclists. And so we did some testing for a couple of months, and the feedback we got is they really loved having the data, but they didn't want to have anything that blocked or obscured the vision. They didn't like the idea of having an element or an object that sat in front of the eye. So we went back to the drawing board, and we then came out with a fully integrated solution where we integrated the optics into into the visor. So in other words, we project the data directly into the lens in a non-obtrusive way, and that removed the element and this object that sat in front of your eyes. For a cyclist, the most important thing is having a full view of the road without anything obscuring or obstructing your vision. So safety was at the cornerstone of our development and our philosophy, to make something that blended in with the road that didn't obscure obstruct your vision. So we then, in 2007, we had a solution that was integrated to a little battery pack, and we did some more testing, and the feedback we got is they didn't like having this battery pack in the back pocket, so we went back to the drawing board, and that's how Everside Raptor was born. We then came out with a full integrated solution.
And one thing about the Raptor is that it is like simple operation. Everything's to the side, it's all contained, but it's weird when you first look at it. Like I was telling Lance, I said I looked at it and I was kind of concerned about the angle of the lens and things like that, because, you know, distortion, some people are very sensitive to it. I put these on, it's zero distortion. The display is not overly like overtaking of the eye, it's just there off to the side. But when you look at the display, you still see what's behind the display. And what we were talking before is previous generations of other, you know, technology in this area used to have that little sticking out monitor, and that monitor would actually obstruct vision. So they went away from this. This is the same technology that our fighter pilots are using. It's all now integrated into this small glass. Now, they're a little thicker than normal glasses, but you got to think about this. There's two batteries in there. There's a little, there's a lot of stuff in there. There's also, there's a gyrometer.
There's a gyrometer, magnetometer, accelerometer. All the components that you have in your mobile device, except for the GSM card, are integrated into stylish eyewear. So it's a mobile device integrated into stylish eyewear, including GPS, Bluetooth, and plus support, and it has an HD camera for capturing videos and pictures.
And that was really cool, because we were looking at how, you know, you hear these things when they have all these features and you're going, well, how do I operate them? And there's no buttons on here. You don't see anything, but it's all a motion of swiping and pushing down and tapping, and it does everything you want it to do. Once you learn this thing, it'd be just effortless in doing what you need to do. Now, I was like wearing it around here at the expo, and I was watching people snapping pictures, taking video. It's got not only the visual cues, but it's also got audio cues as well. So it's a great benefit to have that as well. Now, we're looking at these. Are these available now? Do we have a wait time? Are they pre-order? Where are we at right now?
Yeah, so Raptors are available only by invite currently. We are getting ready for our full production launch, where we'll open up our store to the public. Right now, it's by invite only.
Okay, so we want to find out more info, get ready to get on a mailing list maybe, so when these are available to the general public, where do we go for more info?
You go to everysight.com, or you check out our Facebook page and follow us, where we are providing regular updates on our launch plans, and we're posting videos from all our, those that have already purchased Raptors out there, so you can see all our social media content on Instagram and on Facebook.
Now, the one thing I forgot to ask, and I always hate asking this part, is what's this going to set us back?
So currently we're offering for a limited time only at $499, and the retail price will be $649.
Not bad, considering you get a nice pair of eyewear with interchangeable lenses and whatnot. You can change your lenses, clear, dark. You get all this technology built into it. You don't need really a computer anymore. And does this synchronize with Strava and everything else we have out there yet, or are we working on it?
Absolutely. So you're fully integrated into Strava. You can start and save your ride and upload that to Strava.
Awesome, Lance. Thanks for all that info. Really great piece of technology. Hopefully we see these on everybody's heads soon.
Fantastic. Thank you.
And that was Lance from Everysight. So the Raptor, I wore the lens around, and it was really neat because you could see the data, but it was just kind of like a hint of data, and you could look past it. So, you know, that initial couple of minutes in the glasses, you would look through it and you were really focusing on the data, and you kind of were like, So where we're getting with this is you don't need to look down anymore. Most accidents occur when you look down for that split second to see where you're going, what you're doing, whatever, and all of a sudden you look up and something changed in the road that you didn't catch. So this is a great tool for trying to eliminate a lot of those accidents. the athlete, the pro athlete, the triathlete, the time trialist, somebody who's looking for accurate data during their performances, this is also another great option for them, another great tool to throw in the arsenal. It would allow you to stay in a more aerodynamic position and without having to look up or look down and change things. You can see accurate data, and the navigation aspect is something that's really good because, you know, sometimes I'm cruising along and I look down and missed a turn. It just happens, you know. So there you have your navigation telling you turn here, turn there. And it's not only the visual cues, but the audio cues that go with it. So it's definitely, it's just a great item. They do look awkward at first, but once you tuck them into a helmet, they look just like everything else. It has a really steep front lens angle, and I thought there was going to be distortion, but there was zero distortion. And they need that space because that's where everything gets displayed and all the little brain of the unit is hidden, so there's a little bit of space. It's a big sunglass, so if you're into super lightweight sunglasses, you know, it's not, this is, you know, not light, but it has a lot of stuff there. Like I said, it has the batteries in it and things like that, but you don't really feel the weight. You put them on and they're very well balanced, and the weight has been distributed through the whole design. They're very clear. The lens quality looked pretty good. Now, mind you, this is, you know, just the first set that I've seen. And, you know, they've various generations in production models. So I was told this was, I think this was one of the production models. Of course, it had been worn by God, who knows how many people, and you know how it gets after that. But no, the, just looking at the technology was really cool. Like, you're looking at a person, but yet you see the numbers off to the side there. But after a few minutes of wearing them, you actually don't focus on the numbers unless you actually look for them. But when you look for them, you can still see past them. So take a look at this. This is a really cool item. It is a little pricey, but then again, the average pair of sunglasses is $200 nowadays for a nice pair. Helmets, computers, when you're said and done, you know, buying a computer, buying a nice pair of sunglasses, you're $400, $500 in. It's really not that bad. So it's kind of sad. I never thought I'd hear myself say that. But, you know, technology's going up. You're getting a lot for your money. And, you know, it's there. So check it out. And it's every site, and check out the Raptor. And I want to make sure I'm saying that right. So if you hear any beeping in the background, that's what it is. You know, because I never do my homework. There it is. There it is. Yeah, every site Raptor. And check it out. So, okay, next up we have an interview with a legend in the sport, another legend. I mean, it's kind of weird when we say that about these people, but been around for a long time. I mean, since I always wanted one of their bikes, and I ended up getting out of downhill because it was more a downhill specific bike, but got a sneak peek at the new Foes Racing line of bikes, and had a nice interview with my friend Bobby Acuna, who's working for Foes Racing now. And he's going to talk a little bit about some of their new bikes and the ideas behind everything. And let's take a listen to Bobby.
Okay, cruising around this infamous Laguna Seca Raceway, I've run into my good old friend Bobby Acuna over here, who's now working for Foes Fabrication, Foes Bikes here. Known them forever, off-road industry. Off-road is where I first heard of Brent, but then started making the downhill bikes way back when in our day, and now back with a vengeance, right?
Oh yes, it's been really good. Last year's Sea Otter was really successful. We introduced the Mutz 150 as well as the co-project hardtail called the Analog that we did with DVO Suspension. Thank you, Bryson. They both were very successful for us. So this year, coming back to Sea Otter, we wanted to launch a new model, but we didn't want to just watch an everyday model for Foz. We've stayed with our single pivot, but we've given it a little bit of a twist and a walking beam sort of setup, which has allowed for it to be a little bit more plush and give us a little higher leverage ratio. But the cool thing is we've also integrated a more of a modern geometry. We're using a trunnion shock. The frame is allowed room for a water bottle cage now. So now we've got some really neat things going on, a little shorter cheat seat stays. You know, customers have been really supportive. I actually had some pre-booked customers show up and ride the 29 version, and they love it. They love the direction we're heading with these.
So the Ridgeback here is their latest offering. It's a really cool-looking bike, nice lines on it. It's got, you can see that just the meticulous fabrication that goes into these things. It's just beautiful. These are unpowder coated, but of course you can get these any way. You get them raw, you could get them powder coated. Mm-hmm. It's a custom build. This is a custom bike. You're going to build it the way you want to build it. And it's just so cool about Foz. It's always been that thing about it. When you get a Foz, you know that bike that you're getting is going to be one and only yours.
It's very solid. We have very, very few issues with bearing wear or anything like that, just because of the robust nature of the frames. As we've gone forward in the last year that I've been with the company, we realized one of the things that is a little different for us, because we do alloy and 6061 alloy only, we won't ever achieve the light weight of the hardtails or the 100 mil or the 120 bikes. So going forward, we'll probably only do 140 and up bikes, and just really good solid designs. I mean, everything on our frames are made in-house. Our machinist Nico, he creates the head tubes, the bottom brackets, you know, threaded and external cable routing, all of that stuff that we do. We do it purposely so that way you have an easier vehicle to put together and ride.
Yeah, and that's it. And they're just like I said. It's just time. It's ease. It's whatever. I mean, and they're solid machines. A couple of my close personal friends that I've been racing with for 20 plus years here, they still have their old LTSs in their garage, and they're still riding them. So, I don't think Brent wants to hear that, but hey, they're still out there being ridden.
Well, it's interesting. I had a number of customers in the last few days come by, and they were telling me how, wow, you know, you can't ever find a good used Foz. They're always sold, or you see it, it's gone pretty quickly, you know, in all sorts of different, you know, variations of used and whatnot. So it's funny how it works. I was just speaking with Sports Closet. We did a successful sale to them last year, and we talked about how now we might be able to work with each other. And they're big into selling used products. So if I can help a customer, because a lot of time I get customers that come to me and they go, hey, I want to buy a frame, but I got to sell my bike first. So now this will give them sort of a turnkey place to go that they can download their bike, get it sold through that platform, and then come buy our frame.
There you go. Yeah.
And so it was a great concept. Again, that's something we're hashing out now. I mean, we're even looking, you know, going into the next couple of quarters of 2018. I'm hoping to get a new website going. We have some other really exciting projects going on just on the side. So it's given us that room where we can continue to develop and create things that are purposeful. You know, much like the Ridgebacks, you know, we have longer travel 27.5 version bike in the FXR. Well, the Ridgeback now bridges that gap for a guy that doesn't want that much travel and is looking for something else that he can put a water bottle cage on and that kind of thing.
And that's something that a lot of bike builders forget about. And that, I know you probably have something to do with that as an XC racer yourself, is that, hey, you know what? We're not all into carrying camelbacks and bladder systems. I just want to carry a bottle for a short ride. I don't want to have to carry all that extra weight. And it's nice to see that being built on these bikes. So, number one, where are we going to get, what's the starting point on the Ridgebacks now?
Price point is going to be $23.99.99 for a DVO Topaz equipped Ridgeback frame, and then $24.99.99 for a Fox DPS equipped frame. But those numbers right now are still being crunched, and we're still looking at things. They still might go north a little bit, but as I as of now, we are taking pre-book orders. So if you come in and you pre-book at the $23.99 or the $24, I will hold it at that for you.
So that's great. So get in and get your pre-orders in now. Bobby's looking a little thin. He might need to eat.
Oh, no, no. That's the dirty vegan diet. It's been awesome. Now, something to keep in mind, with that pre-book order, if you pre-book at full retail, you'll get a free powder coat paint job and freight inside of the continental United States to your door.
That's a smoking good deal. Or you could just cruise on down to Pasadena and visit the shop, right?
Actually, we're in San Dimas now.
Oh, San Dimas. Yeah. You guys moved.
The home of Bill and Ted. Yes.
Yeah, San Dimas. All right. So still local. It's all good.
It's
awesome.
It's a great move for us. It leaves us with a whole San Gabriel mountain range as a test bed. Traditionally, these bikes were tested in the Wilson area, and they will be tested in the Mount Wilson area going forward. That's where actually I got to test the analog hardtail last year, and it was brilliant. I was going faster on my first couple of runs down Sunset on that thing than I was one of my older fullies. So it was like, oh my gosh, we're onto something here. But again, the area is utterly amazing. I'm really excited about the guys I have lined up to test these. One of is our machinist, Nico, once again. He's a talented rider, and he has a if it's going to break, it'll break under Nico. And then I also have young Andrew Stallings is going to join us on this, help us out from West Covina Cyclery, and also works for KMC. So I'm excited about having him on board as well. There's a couple other cats.
And we can't forget the infamous Bobby Acuna as well. If you follow him on Facebook, he's always in the dirt, and he's always pushing hard. I've raced with this guy. I've had my good days where I've stayed in front of him, and I have my days where I had to look at him. And looking at him from behind just doesn't
do it for you.
Nah, that don't do it for me. So, anyways, where are we going to go get more info on all your bikes?
You can go to foesracing.com. You can also email me through the website. There is an info at contact. So if you want any more information, just shoot me an email, and we can definitely talk about these things. I'm also going to do out-of-office demos. So if you're in the Southern California area and you have time, and possibly in the afternoons, maybe on the weekend, you can give me a call, and we can look at getting together, making an arrangement. We can ride out of the office any number of trails, and you can get a really awesome chance of riding a Foes bike.
Now, who offers that? This is only a thing that Foes offers. All right, Bobby, thanks for all that information. Take a look at the Ridgeback. It's a beautiful, beautiful bike, along with the rest of their bikes. They're all gorgeous. Awesome craftsmanship. Can't go wrong. So thanks, Bobby, for everything. Stay out of the sun, my friend.
Oh, for sure, Robert. For sure. It was great talking with you, buddy.
Oh, my good old friend, Bobby Acuna. Yeah, we've raced many events together, and let me just tell you, the guy's a fast rider, definitely really smooth, and I don't look forward to racing him again. He's just getting stronger, leaner, and some of us have put on a few pounds. But anyways, it is what it is, right? All right, so this is the first show of the Interbike. It's going to be our first show from Sea Otter. Tune in about a week, and you're going to hear part two. Tune in to killradio.org. You can listen to it live, and you can hear the show. It plays somewhere in rotation, probably 2 to 3 times a day. You could also tune in, follow us on the Facebook page. You can see pictures of some of the items. Got a couple pictures with Charlie Kelly. Got some pictures of me wearing the every site. We got a picture of the Foes Razorbacks, and Joe Breeze, and some just miscellaneous pictures from Interbike. Interbike West, aka Sea Otter 2018. So tune in next time. You'll hear more from our friends from Sea Otter Classic. And once again, you also can find the podcast at Radio for All. Check out Bike Sport Radio, and there you go. So with that, it is now time to say farewell. And I'm going to sign off with one of my favorite all-time songs. It says it for me. There just are no more words. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll talk to you next time. Don't forget to follow us on Facebook. And if you want anything you hear, tell them you heard it on Bike Sport Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Catch you later.